I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast, Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. Doc says.
Hello and welcome to the Doc Says here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, author of the WrestleMania Era book series, and this is the Sunday Wrestling Conversation. Joining me today, he is the author of Sir Sam's Court on lordsofpain.net. He's a frequent guest host on Lords of Pain Radio, and he is a huge wrestling fan. Like all of us, I welcome back to this program, Sir Sam. Welcome back, sir.
Excellent. Thank you very much for having me, Doc. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Yeah, it's good to have you back, man. We had a great, interesting chat when you were on the show earlier in the year. I think it was maybe middle of the springtime. And that was at a time when both of us were in a unique point in our wrestling fandoms. I think a lot has changed for the both of us in the last 6 months since we last spoke in this format.
Yeah.
Fascinating, I think, because you basically...
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's been a... It's an unprecedented, really, change for myself. At the start of the year, I wrote a column, actually, saying... how to be positive about wrestling in 2019, how not to get angry. Actually, I think I called it how not to hate wrestling in 2019. And I outlined a whole bunch of things. And at that point, I was watching New Japan and WWE, and I was pretty happy with both of those. But I very early in the year just had to take my own instructions, and I haven't watched WWE since Money in the Bank. I caught one episode of SmackDown, the big debut on Fox, and I caught a couple of the main events, the big matches from SummerSlam, just because I felt like they were worth checking out. But apart from those, I haven't watched it since Money in the Bank because I don't know, I just became on the lead into WrestleMania. I just became increasingly frustrated and disenfranchised and just. I wasn't enjoying thinking about, writing about, or watching WWE. And so I ended up taking my own medicine when Money in the Bank finished up and said, I'm going to take a step back. And I've been watching other promotions, and it's been great. So I've been really enjoying New Japan. I've watched the G1 and wrote about it a fair bit. I've been watching AEW and also NWA recently, which was – now that's a surprise. – I did not expect to be watching NWA in 2019, I can tell you that.
I don't think any of us did. It's been a fascinating journey with them, and that's something I'd like to actually talk about in a little while. But there was one thing that you brought up in column form. I believe it was the last column that I saw you write about WWE, and it came shortly after that episode of SmackDown that you mentioned having watched when they debuted on Fox. And I want to bring that up because I feel like right now Twitter has become a place where it's increasingly challenging to have a good conversation about wrestling. And I think a lot of that stems from it's almost like it's like politics around the world. I think here in the United States we get into this mindset that our political climate is unique to us, but I don't think it is. I think the political climate here is a pretty good microcosm for the way politics are just about everywhere. It's a toxic discussion topic. It's a polarizing discussion topic, and wrestling right now is incredibly polarizing. And it's like if you're a WWE fan from way back when, or even if you were a WWE fan for 30 years, like myself, and then you decide that it's just not for you anymore, that there is just this mindset where you're either all into it or you're all out of it. And if you are a level-headed person who has legitimate gripes about the things you've seen on WWE TV for a long time, that there seems to be a mindset on Twitter that you're like, you're crazy, or you're stupid, or you live in your mom's basement and have no life and have nothing better to do but complain. And I think that your column did a really nice job of making clear that that's not true. I mean, I got the sense from the column that you wrote, and I'll let you describe it here in a moment, but I got the sense, I sympathized with it, I resonated with it a lot, because it really kind of felt, it captured my own voice as someone who has been a long time dedicated, pretty much all WWE fan for 20 plus years. I felt like that column did a really nice job of capturing that, all right, the way they've chosen to go with this product is not tailored to a fan that has been a loyal fan of their product for a long, long time, and that the attention to details, the little things, which you and I are going to talk about later when we switch gears to speaking about a different promotion, are just not in place to sustain a week-to-week fandom. And I know for me, I just got tired of changing my fan habits to suit the change in WWE and found something that allowed my fan habits I'd always had to be maintained just through a different avenue. So if you want, talk a little bit about that column and where your headspace is at, because it is awfully weird, I think you would agree, that you and I are speaking on the eve of Survivor Series weekend, and I don't think either one of us really has any plans to take part in it.
Yeah, it's strange. So the column you're talking about was called Why I Can No Longer Watch WWE, and it got an incredible response. I think across, including Facebook comments and comments on the website, it had, I think, over 150 comments on it, which for generally most of the columns I write, you're happy if you get, you know, over 10.
Nobody's so columns get comments
that's
anymore.
No, and to get 150 was – it obviously struck a nerve, and there was lots of people who felt like I did sum up how they felt, and then there was lots of people who really didn't like what I had to say. Before I do describe the column, I think you described sort of the way that the wrestling community is at the moment, and I read a really interesting book a while ago called Tribes by a guy called Sebastian Junger, and it talks about how being part of a tribe is – it's been one of the bedrocks for humanity's success in general, and it's really deeply ingrained into how we interact with other people. But it also, particularly in the modern era with the internet and exposure to so many people and so many different viewpoints and instant takes as well, it's become something that's really polarized our community. And what it kind of talks about is the way that humans sort of evolved and thrived. We were never individually the biggest, meanest, baddest people on the planet. But because we are communal, and we're able to communicate together, we're able to form tribes, and through the cumulative effort, to get all together pushing in one direction, we were able to thrive and indeed essentially take over this world. That's a real quick summary of this book. Mm-hmm. But what comes with being in a tribe is that you are loyal to that tribe, and you have shared ideals and shared goals, and I think a lot of people, it's very clear in politics that one of the sort of drawbacks of this is you will very quickly and easily build up a combined goal, a cumulative goal that you're all working together, but also an enemy that you all hate, and that hate sort of builds in on itself and piles in on itself as you have less communication with people from the other side, and you're, I guess, idea of what the other side talks about and is represents becomes more and more of a caricature almost. And you may be reinforced by the other side also acting out against you because, of course, there's tribes on both sides. And neither side, you know, in these sort of tightly knit things, there's not a lot of room to move. And so I think that's what the internet wrestling community is suffering from at the moment, because there is so – you know, two very clear tribes to be a part of. And I don't want to have any part of being, you know, exclusively part of one thing. And I think one of the things that, to get back to my article, one of the things that that article sought to communicate was that one of the reasons that I don't watch the WWE anymore is because I actually really love some of the wrestlers that are there, and I want it to be better so much, and watching it constantly fail to, or constantly not, because there are people, so it's not failing, because there are people who do enjoy it, and good for them, but it's constantly presented in a way that I just can't enjoy. If you look at someone like Seth Rollins, I, in the lead up to WrestleMania, I was really critical of the way that they did his story, because he had this massive, long, in-depth story they could have dug into with so much backstory and so much history, and they just ignored it all and plugged him into pretty much the same program that he was in the year that Roman Reigns was in the year before, calling out Brock Lesnar for being a part-timer, which, yeah, whatever, that's true, and that's definitely something I don't appreciate about Brock Lesnar, but I'd much prefer they had taken something that, you know, has a bit more history. And that's just one example, right? I've been a fan of the WWE ever since I came back to wrestling in 2014, and it's been largely the same promotion, the one promotion that I've watched, but it's just not presented in a way that – it's presented in a way that feels like it's antagonizing me constantly. And I don't know, in 2019 there's so many other places where I can watch wrestling that don't seem to be constantly trying to antagonize me, and the way that they want to grab my attention is through negativity.
God, and that's a great way to put it.
There we go.
And it's not
really
fun.
That was a really long explanation, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, you talk about being a part of a tribe, and if the tribe that you're a part of is constantly sparking the negative side of your emotions, then, you know, I mean, there's certainly a philosophy that I think embraces that in 2019, but that's certainly not my philosophy. You know, I got pretty tired of feeling that way about WWE. I got tired of most of the people I'd grown up, you know, over the last. I mean, really, I mean, you're one of the newer folks that I've grown to communicate regularly with, but a lot of the people that I communicate with on Twitter, I've been communicating with in some form or fashion on the internet since 2003. And most of the people that I've still keep up with from all the way back then, I mean, they just don't like it anymore. And so you go on the very forum you used to go on to try to have an analytical discussion, we'll say, about somebody like Brock Lesnar. You know, there was an interesting thing that was put out on Twitter that some people loved and some people hated. It was comparing Brock Lesnar now to Hollywood Hulk Hogan in the WCW Monday Nitro era. And there were some pretty passionate responses to it that just totally disregarded it as being at all interesting. And, I mean, back in the day, I used to enjoy engaging in conversations like that, because I thought, you know, that's an interesting think piece that was put together with that. And then I went into a whole thing about a fairly prominent writer for Bleacher Report, I believe. He wrote something along the lines of how Brock Lesnar's so amazing in the ring. And so I challenged that. I thought, like, that's analytically, I think that's an interesting topic. Let's break that down. Like, What's so amazing about what Brock Lesnar does in the ring? Like, that's not, you know, that it was said in such a way that was like, that's a definitive thing. No one can dispute that. And I disputed that. And it was a very strange conversation, because the guy was very flippant in regards to any response that I had. And eventually he took it as I was being disrespectful to him. And I was like, aren't you being disrespectful to me? I mean, you've been flippant with this entire line of dialogue, and he eventually told me, he's like, I never thought I'd have to explain to somebody why Brock Lesnar is awesome. I'm like, really? Like, so there's no room for discussion here about whether or not Brock Lesnar is awesome. And I went into this whole thing the next day about trying to define it and getting into analytical conversations about who's the best? Why are they the best? How do you define greatness in the ring? I mean, the things that I've written about so much that I eventually wrote my two books about. I mean, I used to love doing that, and it's very hard to even do that now about WWE, because it always ends up devolving into something that you didn't intend for it to devolve into. The only way you can really get a multiple, you know, a really good back and forth discussion about is something I don't even like talking about, which is the whole idea that WWE, the people who hate things that happen in WWE, turn around and love the same thing that happens in another promotion, and they're hypocritical. That's like my hill to die on that I talked about on last week's show. So, you know, it's hard to have a conversation about WWE anymore. It's hard to have a conversation outside of a forum like this. It's hard to have a conversation about anything in wrestling, it seems, without it sort of going off in this direction that is inherently negative. So I think you bring up a very good point talking about tribes. And, you know, we're on the eve of Survivor Series weekend, and I just this should be a time.
Great segue.
You know, this should be a time where we're, I think a lot of us should be that are longtime WWE fans. This is one of the big four. We should feel compelled to jump back in. NXT has joined the mix in this brand supremacy type thing that they've continued now for the fourth year in a row. And I'll be honest with you, man, I just don't care. I look at the War Games card for NXT and I see two War Games matches and I'm not compelled by it. I look at the Survivor Series card, and NXT being involved is it makes it better. I think it makes that concept better. But that concept is a good microcosm of what you were mentioning earlier about Seth Rollins. It's like, let's just follow here are all these different roads that we could take. You know, here's all the paths that we can take. We could go this way. We could go that way. There's this big giant lane we could follow where nothing interesting happens. It's just a road that we travel down. It's linear. There's a bunch of fields on this side and a bunch of trees on this side. There's no landmarks. There's nothing really to see. It's just miles and miles of grains on the left and trees on the right. Let's follow that path. Like, well, there's nothing interesting to see on that path. Can we go down that path instead, where, you know, you've got the world's largest Superman statue? Or can we go down that path over there that might take us by the world's largest dresser? I mean, even the world's largest dresser is interesting when you're comparing it to miles and miles of fields and trees. And I feel like WWE always takes the path of the least interesting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. And I mean, to bring it back to to lay my cards fully on the table, I paid next to no attention to Survivor Series, and I know peripherally what's happening in NXT, but that's just from following social media accounts that happen to be speaking about it. I haven't watched clips from it. I haven't really done any of that. So I'm not really able to talk about what's specifically happening right now. But I guess to bring it back to my article, even, that I wrote about, it's not that the WWE doesn't do good things, and by the looks of it, particularly in NXT, they are doing some good things. I think the problem that I've got is that I just know that eventually they're going to – I don't have faith in them to pull anything good off for a long time, and that happened at the end of the SmackDown episode, which was, for the most part, fairly engaging and quite good. But then it ended in this farcical – match between Kofi Kingston and Brock Lesnar to set up an even more farcical match. And yeah, I'm not stupid. I understand the business reasons they did these things, but I don't watch. I don't watch for that. I want to see, you know, I would have liked to have seen a really good match between Kofi Kingston and Brock Lesnar, but they decided not to do that. And instead they decided to do it to promote an upcoming show that is morally dubious at best. between a guy who wrestles a handful of times a year against a guy who has wrestled a handful of times in his life. And we saw how it sort of ended up. And it didn't take a very, very powerful crystal ball to see how this would end up. It was kind of, I think that's why I didn't like it, because I could see exactly what was happening. And I just thought, I don't want to see this. And I don't want to see the wrestlers that I love churned up in this meat grinder of a storytelling apparatus that's just not working. And even to look at something like Survivor Series in NXT, from what I understand in NXT, yeah, they've got this War Games thing set up. But because it happens at the same time every year, they've now got people teaming on one side who've been feuding for most of the year and out for one another. And then all of a sudden they're teaming together. And I don't know about NXT in the future, but I know that Raw and SmackDown will completely forget about these feuds. And in 6 months' time, they'll probably be drafted. Half of them will probably be drafted to the other brand. So, like, why do they care about brand supremacy at all in the first place? This stuff's never explained. And I don't know. To me, that just means that it's not something I want.
3 weeks ago. I mean, the draft was like three weeks ago. Not to cut you off, but I felt like Raw right after the draft was actually getting something going, where they were introducing new characters and there was a lot of focus on current feuds and about trying to create new dynamics. As soon as Survivor Series hype started, all of that stopped. It all stopped. And we went right into the traditional, here comes this brand, here comes this brand, NXT's invading. NXT invading is interesting in the moment. And there are certain aspects, you talk about there being good things going on. The Shayna Baszler and Becky Lynch interaction, that's if you're going to see anything that's going on right now.
Oh, that would be incredible.
That's what you should see, because that's what's going on. And that's going to be, to me, that's got to be one of the semi-main events at WrestleMania this coming year. Like, that's the way it comes across that way immediately. That Becky Lynch versus Shayna Baszler, that's a big deal, that's happening. And you should pay attention to it, and you could feel it. That's one of those things you can just feel. You know what I'm talking about? Like, when two wrestlers step in the ring, you can clearly see what this one's all about. You can clearly see what this one's all about. As soon as they interact, it's electric. That's powerful. So I love that. That's the good thing. But with NXT in general, I mean, it's like you've got the invasion angle that we've seen time and time again, and I just, the whole brand supremacy thing really falls flat with me. And Dave Fenichel, who you and I both know, he texted me about a week ago, and he said, man, this Survivor Series card looks great. And I said, oh yeah, sell me on it. And he said, are you pretty much over it? Speaking of WWE, are you just completely like pretty much moved on? And I said, I don't think I'm completely moved on. But I definitely, I'm in a mode right now where I'm not exactly missing it, because what I'm watching is giving me what I'm looking for. So let's move on. If you have anything else to say about your article, go for it. But otherwise, let's talk about some of the stuff you and I have been enjoying watching, because I think, tonight's Survivor Series, last night was NXT TakeOver War Games. But yeah, I felt they were worth mentioning, but I also felt it was worth contextualizing why we weren't watching. So anything else you want to say on the WWE front?
Oh, I would just say it's not, as I said, this is a relatively new thing for me, being so disenchanted. I know that you've been sort of down this path for a lot longer. Like, as early as, you know, post SummerSlam last year, I was writing articles about defending and talking about how great what was going on in the WWE was, when I felt like there was a significant bunch of people who weren't seeing it. And I would love for that to return. I, as I said, I love these characters. Someone like, I really miss seeing Mustafa Ali wrestle, but whenever I see him wrestle now, I just can't help but think of what happened to him at Money in the Bank. You know, I would love to see Seth Rollins as a great champion, but just for whatever's going on in that company, it's just not working for me. Anyway, I spoke too much about the negativity. Let's get on to the positive stuff.
Indeed. Let's talk a little bit about let's talk about AEW. Because I think of all the promotions that we've watched, All Elite Wrestling, correct me if I'm wrong on your end, but it's captured what I want from pro wrestling most. And that is, I want to see matches that feel like they have stakes. Even the ones on television. Especially the ones on television. Because if I'm going to commit to watching week to week, then I want to feel like what I watched October 1st matters on November 15th. I want that from a wrestling promotion, and I don't think that's too much to ask. I want to see characters start to sort of get the platform to say what they're capable of saying without sort of being dumbed down and homogenized. I'm getting a lot out of AEW that I for a long time didn't feel like I got out of WWE consistently. And it's not that AEW is perfect. It's not perfect. But what it is, it's a company that feels like it's trying really hard to be something special. And whereas on the flip side with WWE, I for a long time just felt like, again, using the analogy of rolling down the road and having all sorts of different paths to take and taking the least interesting path, the path with very little to see, the path that would get you from point A to B, speaking of an analogy to a storyline, but just wouldn't do so in a way that connected with me in any kind of emotional way. So how are you feeling about AEW right now?
Yeah, look, it's funny that you describe it that way, because I read an article on the LOP Columns Forum, actually, by a guy called King Zach, who's just one of the regular writers down there. And he wrote an article sort of critical of AEW and particularly critical of how he felt like it hadn't done enough to be different, and how it was basic. He was saying it's basically pretty similar to the WWE. And for me, I think what it shows is that it is fairly similar, really, but it just takes a few little changes for there to be something that is super engaging and super interesting. Like, just for example, just as a quick example, the week before the episode before the most recent Dynamite episode, straight after Full Gear, there was the opening part was with Moxley, and it was Michael Nakazawa was in the ring with him. And Michael Nakazawa has been established as a character who's friends and sort of almost running buddies with Kenny Omega, and previously has wrestled in a comedic manner with the baby oil and stuff, which, you know, take it or leave it if you like that stuff. But in this match, it was straight after Full Gear, straight after Mox went to war with Omega and put Omega on the shelf. So Nakazawa makes a point of throwing the baby oil aside and wrestling in a really serious manner, because he wanted to be there for his bro, for his mate. He wanted to stand up for his mate. And that's something that's really small, but it speaks depth about the way that they treat their characters there. Their characters are three-dimensional. And of course, Moxley made quick work of him, but it was a very different tone to any way we've seen Nakazawa wrestle previously. And it was because he was reacting to what had happened the last time they'd been on the air, what had happened to his friend, someone who's established as his friend. And as a character, that's the way that he did it. And it was, I don't know, to me, that spoke really clearly as to what I kind of want to see. Or even, say, maybe the episode before Full Gear, where at the final end, you just had all of these established rivalries and feuds bumping up against one another in that ending brawl. It wasn't just a chaotic brawl that was just everyone piling in on one another. There was certain allegiances and things were happening in there that made sense of the stories and the characters that were involved. But because of that, it was really compelling with how, you know, Kenny Omega's in a feud with Moxley, and even though he's not wrestling Moxley, this brawl starts. And of course, because Moxley's an absolute madman, he jumps the fence and comes out and wants to get a piece of Omega in that. But then someone attacks Moxley, so all of a sudden Moxley's brawling with someone else, and Pac sort of slinks off because he's a bit of a you know, he, even though he's a bad guy, he's a lot more slimy and wants to look after himself, and so he sort of slinks off. And I don't know, that sort of character development and that sort of three-dimensional world where things are interjoined and things bump up against one another, that's what I want to see. And I feel like that's what I'm getting in AEW.
And I feel like it's worth saying that, you know, if we're sitting here 6 months from now and AEW has fallen into the trap of the same type of stuff that we've had so many issues with WWE about, that, I mean, I think that I don't think anybody's going to give a crap about AEW anymore. I think the idea that if that you can just do something in AEW and it be okay, but if it's if the same thing's done in WWE, then it sucks, I think is very flawed, and it doesn't give wrestling fans enough credit for being people who have an expectation of what they want out of their entertainment. And if they're not being entertained by it the same way in AEW that they weren't entertained by it in WWE, I think they're going to pivot and go find something else. I mean, I think that's more than fair. And now you look
and
at,
just to jump in there,
yeah, go with, for it.
Just to jump in with what you were saying, there is that criticism where sometimes there's that criticism where, oh, if this happened in the WWE, this, you know, people would be up in arms about it. I think part of it is that we might be frustrated with something. For example, I think we're going to talk about the women's division earlier. That's been a popular whipping boy, but or target, probably a better term to put on it. But that's I think because they're a new promotion, because they haven't been doing the same bad habits for years, because you know, a lot of these guys, people who have, you know, you shouldn't be expected to have followed these guys previously on the indies or in New Japan or on YouTube or wherever you've discovered them. But because, you know, they've been doing that for years and engaging us as fans for years, you give them a bit more grace than the WWE. And I'm perfectly happy to admit that I've come to the end of my tether with the WWE. I gave them lots of chances and they've used it up. And so, yeah, AEW might do things that, you know, aren't great, or they might not have fixed everything up, but I'm willing to give them more chances at this point because I haven't been burnt so many times, because they've, as a whole, they haven't. Look, if they, as you said, if they did fall into those traps, I'm sure yourself and myself would probably pretty quickly, well, not maybe not pretty quickly, but, you know, we'd eventually probably stop watching them and do the same thing we've done with the WWE.
I think of it like a new relationship with a person. You know, if you are, if you have a bad experience with someone you're dating, and they do some things, quite frankly, that rub you the wrong way, and they do it consistently, and then they do other things that rub you the wrong way consistently, and all of those things add up, then the relationship ends because it no longer serves your life. And I'm a big believer that the things in your life are either serving you in a positive way or they're serving you in a negative way. And if they're serving you in a negative way, then they need to go. So if you go into a new relationship, there might be some subtle signs of the things that weren't so great in a different relationship, but it's a new person and you give that new person a chance. And if all those same things add back up, then the relationship ends again. So let's be a little analytical here. Let's have a little bit of an analytical conversation. Let's talk about the AEW women's division. I'd be curious to get your take on what you think that it needs to do. And I would actually like to do that first by asking you this. I have always talked about improving the division by adding stars, because I think that the analogy I've often used with them is that, I don't know if you follow the NBA or NFL or anything like that, but in drafts, they have a whole bunch of mid to late first round draft picks. They don't have a top five pick. And because of that, they lack star power. So they're having to build a division with people that are not really suited to carry it. So it's kind of more of a team effort. I don't look at Riho as being somebody who's a top five pick. I don't. So I think that ultimately this is a division that needs a Tessa Blanchard it needs one of the top WWE women's division stars to defect to really get to the level that I think a lot of people want it to reach. But I think that you rewind the clock. Let's rewind the clock 5 years. 5 years ago, NXT is building its women's division out of the likes of Paige, who at that time no one really knew anything about. They're building it out of Emma. They're building it out of a young Sasha Banks that no one was familiar with, a young Becky Lynch that no one was familiar with, and of course Charlotte Flair, who had the pedigree. Now, they don't have a Charlotte Flair. They don't have someone with that pedigree. But if you were going to – so I think we have to give AEW some time to just build up a bunch of different roster members and characters slowly but surely. It's not going to be the type of thing that you have anyone there that you can put out there front and center like they have with Chris Jericho, Cody, Kenny Omega, any of the tag teams that comprise their stacked tag team division. It's not going to work that way because they don't have the guns for it. How are you, Sam, going to build the AEW women's division best with the component parts they've already got?
Yeah, look, I agree with what you've said there. For whatever reason, they missed out on getting a big signing for their women's division, and that's unfortunate because it does mean that, as you said, they've lacked the star power, and because of that, they kind of don't have an ideal central focus for everything to work around. And I think in the meantime, Riho has actually proved herself to be pretty good at that job. She would not have been, I don't think, anyone's pick for that position, but she has been able to get on that opening Dynamite episode. She took the crowd from being her and Nyla Rose, Riho's a very experienced wrestler. I don't believe Nyla Rose is, but they managed to take a crowd that was indifferent at best to what was going on to being absolutely blowing out of their seats from it. And I think the, unfortunately, and it's not what a lot of people want to hear, who are WWE fans who are saying, I want more female representation in this company, or even AEW fans who are saying, I want more female representation. I think the problem is they're just going to need time because some of these guys aren't necessarily ready to be exposed to being on mainstream cable TV at prime time. And to put them on now would be to do them a disservice. But in the meantime, I think Riho has been fantastic. They could definitely use maybe giving her a translator so that she can speak a little bit more about who she is and define her character. But in the ring, I think she's very effective at getting people interested in these matches and invested in these matches. The other names that stand out to me as having real potential, obviously Awesome Kong, even though she is a veteran and has been around for a long time, and I don't know, in the matches I've seen her in, she's not what she was in her prime, but she's still a name that could draw and a name that means something, and they are doing something with her at the moment, and it's a slow burn what they're doing with Brandy, but I'm sure that something will pay off, and she is definitely someone that it will be interesting to see Riho go up against. The other name that stands out is Mercedes Martinez, who I don't think is actually signed full-time but has been on AEW Dark, was there the Joker when they did the Casino Battle Royale. And she, even though she's not a name, she seems to exude the sort of swagger that a star does and has the sort of style of it, like a Shayna Baszler, where, you know, she just looks and feels dangerous. And I think that would be a great person to have as a big player in your division. And the other one is one of the other Joshi wrestlers, Hikaru Shida, who is actually in Japan, was a movie star and came over and learned to wrestle for a movie that she was doing and loved it so much that she wanted to continue wrestling. She's had a few appearances but hasn't been really given a huge platform, but I think she's got the charisma to be another big player. And, of course, with all of these guys, unfortunately, it's not going to be an overnight thing where you've got a, you know, none of them are completely ready. None of them are the finished package. So I think it will be a, you know, a good 6 months or so, and maybe some AEW, lots of AEW dark matches, before they're, you know, really well and truly firing as a division.
I think one of the things
that's I'm happy to give them that time, honestly. This is a marathon, not a sprint.
Bingo. That was the next thing I was going to say. That's partly why I brought up the NXT women's division from back in the day, is we're used to seeing, particularly in I think if you ever get around to watching any of Impact Wrestling, which when you're with right now with the kind of mindset that you're in, I would recommend that you do. It's or go back and I don't know if you ever watched Lucha Underground, but some of the stuff that they did, a lot of the slow build type stuff that you see with the development of a television show. I think that is the type of patience we need to have with the women's division. And with a lot of stuff in AEW that's not fully realized yet, it shouldn't be. And Wayne Dyer has a quote that I like a lot, that if you change the way that you look at things, then the things you look at change. And I think we're all in this mode where we've been conditioned to be very instantly gratified with our professional wrestling. And I want to return to a state of fandom, and I feel like AEW is cultivating this. We're just going to have to be patient sometimes. And I think that if we are, then we get to the summer of next year when maybe Double or Nothing 2 or whatever the equivalent pay-per-view at that time of the year ends up being. And they do bring in somebody like a Tessa Blanchard, and she comes into a division that's been developed carefully over the previous 12 months with people like Dr. Britt Baker, with people like Hikaru Shida and Rio and the element of Awesome Kong and some of the other women that they've got coming up, if Mercedes Martinez, one of the girls I saw who wrestled Hikaru Shida on AEW Dark the night that I went, which is the night where the chaotic brawl happened. Big Swole, I was pretty impressed with what I saw from her that night. I mean, they've got some talent there if they develop it well. And they're not developing it poorly. I think another problem people have is that it's not getting that much of a spotlight. But, you know, it's a two-hour show. Clearly the tag team division's carrying it right now. They've got some real, I think, star power in the men's division that they need to cultivate. We'll see what happens as time goes on. But right now I think patience is going to be the key. And by the time they do bring in that star is going to be joining a division that has been developed and hopefully developed well. So timing-wise.
And then also to add to that quickly, if they were to bring in, you know, a Sasha Banks or something now, it would almost be a disservice to the rest of the female wrestlers in that, well, it would be good, of course, but there could be a problem in that they're just such a bright star that they eclipse everyone and then they beat everyone. Then what happens? Like, it may be hard to build, it may make it hard to build up other people to that level if there's only one person in the division who is just clearly streaks ahead of everyone else.
If you could take one female wrestler from outside of AEW and bring her to AEW, who would it be?
For me, if you could pick anyone, Ronda Rousey? No. that would certainly make an impact.
Yes, it would.
Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch, if you could. Probably in terms of the tone would have been Sasha Banks before she re-debuted. That would have been the CM Punk moment that everyone wanted.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. And I think eventually AEW is going to need that in some way, FYI.
Absolutely. If they haven't established something in 12 months' time, it's a problem.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Chris Jericho. I was a critic of Chris Jericho. I addressed on the show last week that I've really come around to him as champion, and I'm enjoying him as champion. I am very cognizant, though, of now that it seems like he's going to go on a little bit of a run here. Because Cody, if they were going to have Jericho drop the title anytime soon, nobody had more momentum than Cody to take the title from him. So I'd like to peer into the crystal ball and be a little bit more analytical in this regard. I would be curious if you had a top three. Who takes the championship from Chris Jericho and when?
So, I'm not sure if you watch Being the Elite. Do you watch Being the Elite, Chad?
I honestly do not.
No, okay. Oh, man, you should watch it. You're missing out. The thing that they've sort of started doing on this, and they've hinted at it and talked about it a little bit on commentary and hinted at it in the on-air presentation, is that they are talking about how the Elite is fracturing. In the most recent episode of Being the Elite, just from this week, Kenny Omega was really despondent, and he and Matt Jackson gave him a dressing down, saying, "You're not the old Kenny Omega. You're not the Kenny Omega that we knew in New Japan, who just tore things up. Something's going on in your head, and you need to find yourself." And Adam Page, he said, "I've lost to Jericho. I've lost to Pac. I'm losing to everyone. I need to be by myself right now." And Cody wasn't even in the scenes, and all that was left was Matt and Nick Jackson going, "What the hell's going on? This was meant to be fun. Ever since we started All Elite, everything's really been terrible." And I think what they're doing, and I'm glad they're doing this, is that they're sending the Elite, they're making the Elite struggle, and they're going to separate and divide the Elite, and then it's all going to come together eventually. And it's similar to what they did last year, actually, with the Bullet Club Is Fine, where Cody, through his own nefarious means, split the Bullet Club up and split himself and Adam Page and turned the Young Bucks on Kenny Omega. And it was an incredible story. I don't know if you were watching that closely then, but I cannot explain just how hated Cody Rhodes was. He came to Australia, and most of the time someone like Cody Rhodes comes to Australia, he'll get cheered no matter what's going on. He got booed out of the arena. There was FU Cody chants everywhere because people were so angry, so invested in the Elite as a unit, and so angry that it was splitting apart. And I think that what's going to happen – This would be, I guess, my dream scenario as well, but I actually think it's happening because of what's going on and being the Elite, is that these guys are going to find out that they need to reunite and they need to find each other and rekindle their friendship, and they need to be a united front together to battle, you know, the Inner Circle, MJF, a rampaging John Moxley, a rampaging Pac, Pac. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, honestly. So my pick would be that Kenny Omega is going to be, at the end of all this, Kenny Omega is going to be the guy that dethrones Chris Jericho and takes that championship. I don't know when it would be, since they've already started the running of it. My guess would probably be Double or Nothing, which gives them a good 6 months to tell this story. And I'm really looking forward to it if that happened. If I had to hedge my bets, I'd probably say Adam Page is a chance, just because he's got that history at an upper level. And then the other guy, obviously, you can't not put him in the conversation, would be John Moxley. I think they would be wise to keep Moxley and Jericho as far apart from one another as they can, given that they're both clear main eventers and massive, and probably two of the three biggest stars in the company, along with Kenny Omega. Two of the four biggest stars, let's say, along with Kenny Omega and Cody. Uh-huh. I think they'd do well to keep those two separate, just because that is obviously it's something that's been run before in the other wrestling promotion. Mm-hmm. But he has to be in the conversation as to someone who could beat Jericho, just because he is such a big star and such a mammoth personality in that roster. What do you think?
Well, I think that there's a lot on the table right now for that. I think that we're entering into this next phase of AEW history, where you've got, everything's really been set up to lead into what we saw at Full Gear. It just felt like, with the way that things went down with Moxley and Omega, where they didn't get to have their match at All Out, and with the setup of Jericho as the champion and just how popular Cody rose to prominence and being in the last 6 months, that it all sort of came to a head at Full Gear. And they had their first month and a half of television really dedicated to building up Full Gear. And now that we're away from that, now that we've got this situation with Cody and MJF, and we don't really even know when the next pay-per-view is, right? I mean, right now we're operating on the idea that the next pay-per-view is going to be sometime in the winter, but we don't know when. A lot can happen.
They did just announce a special episode of Dynamite called Bash at the Beach.
Bash at the Beach.
But it will just be an episode of Dynamite. So
it's like a Clash of the Champions.
That could be setting up for something. Yeah.
And you know, so there's a lot that can happen between now and then. And one of the guys who I think we should all keep our eye on, if for no other reason than because I feel like Jim Ross has an orgasm every time he watches this guy wrestle. You know who I'm talking about?
Scorpio Sky.
Well, not Scorpio Sky, but yes.
Oh, really? It's
Phoenix. Ray Phoenix. Every time Ray Phoenix wrestles, JR loses his freaking mind. And it's funny because I feel like, for the most part, JR's role is to just play the somewhat unlovable curmudgeon. You know, I think Phoenix is someone to watch because I suspect eventually, and maybe not too terribly long from now, they're going to break up the Lucha Brothers. And it's going to be a big deal when they do, because when those two guys enter the heavyweight division, then look out. Look out. Ray Phoenix is the type of guy. He may not win the title or anything, but I just wanted to bring him up. He'd be my distant number three. I think that right now Kenny Omega would be my number two. And I am conditioned to assume that wrestling stipulations don't actually matter, that there are loopholes that will allow any wrestling stipulation to be done. And I'll tell you what, man, if we're sitting here 6 months from now and Cody's just gone through this program with MJF and comes out, even in a losing effort, I still feel like Cody beating Jericho still makes a lot of sense. I felt like it made sense a couple of weeks ago, even though everyone, I think, generally assumed it wasn't going to happen. I mean, the amount of babyface momentum that he has built, it's so organic and crazy, especially when you put it into the context that you did, comparing it to last summer when he got booed like crazy in Australia, and apparently that was the role he was playing all the way up until the early part of this year in New Japan, right, when he was the United States champion and dropped the title to Juice Robinson. I mean, that whole dynamic, it's just amazing how much a year can change things. But I'm still of the opinion that Cody should be right up there as the front runner. I think there will be some cool pretenders who don't end up actually winning the championship. But to me, Kenny Omega's got a long way to go to build the kind of momentum as a heroic figure that Cody's got right now. I mean, Cody's got all of that momentum right now. I think Kenny Omega wishes he had half of that momentum right now. So they're going to have to build a compelling story to get Kenny Omega to that level, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think I don't disagree that Cody makes a whole lot of sense. I just don't think they're going to go back on that stipulation. I don't think that they're – not for a while. Not for a while. I don't think it's going to be immediate because – there's too much of that they've made. They will be different, and that would be a very WWE thing to do, and I don't think they're going to do it straight away. I think he will eventually wrestle for that championship again, but I don't think it will be straight away. I say in a completely uneducated way.
and your mind right now is six
completely
months.
Completely unfounded guess.
6 months from now is not is considered to be straight away?
I'd say it's pretty soon. It's definitely well and truly in fans' memories. My theory is that Kenny Omega is going to be built up as part of this story because of how they've been mentioning you're not the same Kenny you were before. And that's the Kenny – and that mirrors the online conversation. It mirrors sort of what people have been saying is that we want to see the Kenny from New Japan who – crushed it, who just blew everyone's minds. And I think that's what they're going to try and do in All Elite.
It should be interesting to see if we can get there. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you joining me. I know we've got to cut We got to go ahead and take off here with commitments that you've got, but I wanted to go ahead and
commitments.
You know, I very much appreciate your time. I enjoyed having you on the show. If there's anything that you want to put out there real quick before we part ways, then fire away.
Yeah, look, just this week I should have started my series full of things. We're pre-recording this. I should have started my Stories That Defined a Decade series, which I've been working on very hard, and I'm really excited to get out there with CM Punk Drops a Pipe Bomb. So check that out on lordsofpain.net, and you can always come and chat to me about wrestling on Twitter, @Sir_Samuel.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, it's been great talking to you, man. I'll talk to you soon, and once again, thank you for joining me. And I'll echo that same sentiment to all of you folks. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening in to me and Sir Sam's conversation. I told him when we first got into our Skype call, right before I hit the record button, that sometimes it's cool to just sit back and think that here I am recording this after an office day on a Tuesday night, and he's recording it on Wednesday during his lunch break, halfway across the world from each other, me in North Carolina in the United States and him in Australia. The fact that we can do that, that we as wrestling fans can sit there and have conversations with each other all over the world, you know, I've got pen pals all over the world and have for a long time, and that's just a really neat thing to think about being able to do in this day and age. So, very cool. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. It's actually probably pretty appropriate that we didn't get into talking about NWA Power as we originally thought we were going to, because it might have ended up being something nobody wanted to hear what we had to say about, because we were going to sing its praises, and then Jim Cornette happened. Surprise, surprise. So I don't think I want to talk about that right now. I tweeted about it, so I retweeted somebody else's opinion on it, which was, very simply put, I'll just read it verbatim. I said it pretty much summed up my thoughts on the topic, and the quote read, and this is from Tights and Fights, the Thankful Wrestling Podcast. If you want to check them out, they're @TightsFights on Twitter. It takes one reasonably minded person of color in that production room who's allowed to voice their opinion to make sure that something like this doesn't make it to air on a taped show. I mean, that doesn't that perfectly sum up that whole dynamic? I mean, it is what it is. But thank you for joining us tonight. We really appreciate your listens, and I hope you enjoy Survivor Series tonight, even though I'm not personally planning on watching. And I hope, genuinely, I hope that War Games last night was awesome. And if there's something from it that you think I should see, speaking about last night's show or tonight's, then let me know. And I certainly will add it to my list. I'm keeping a running list of things that I should see on the WWE Network whenever I resubscribe. Just have to feel compelled. And of course, you know, Royal Rumble's coming up, and I can't imagine a more compelling time of the year to tune in, or at least I'd say that about the past. That's WrestleMania season. So have a great week. Your audio prescription for all things pro wrestling can be filled next Sunday. And I hope everybody here in the States has a good upcoming Thanksgiving week. Cheers. Take care.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the Mania Era is bringing terror on radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania Era.